Thanks for coming back. Here it is, part two.
Hello, my legendary friends. This is Legends and Losers, the show for people who want to create, design, and dominate in their lives, their business, and the world. Hosted by three-time former CMO, category designer, and co-author of Play Bigger, Christopher Lockhead, with Colin Vincent, master photographer and co-founder of Equity Directory. And now, strap yourselves in. It's time for Legends and Losers.
It was an incredible time, and my experience is very similar to yours. But at the time, it feels, it's so interesting, you know, we're all so afraid of failure and public failure and how humiliating that is and so forth. The thing that I loved about that, you know, that was my, what I would consider my third real business failure. And after I was able to get through the same kind of depression feelings you describe and all that stuff and drink too much and not exercise enough and, you know, all of it. And just, you know, that nobody likes me, everybody hates me, I'm going to eat some worms kind of phase of life. After, you know, three losses, my first company that I started and then losing in the CRM wars to Siebel and then the dot-com thing, it did give me some perspective to go, hey man, there's wins and losses. And to your point, you just keep fighting. And all of a sudden it doesn't, I mean, I still hate losing, but here's the thing. I always hated when I was a young man, Tony, when people said, oh, it's not the destination, it's a journey. And, you know, I grew up with nothing and I needed some fucking destination in my life, so to speak, you know, I needed some destination. I needed some results. I didn't have anything, right? But what I've learned over time now, at least for me, is the prize is the journey. There's no prize at the destination, really. You know, when I talked to Eric Weinmeier, the blind extraordinary athlete who summited Everest, I the first question I asked him, Tony, was, so what's it like to stand on top of the world? And he shares that with me. But then he immediately went to, and hey, now we got to climb down. And down's more dangerous than up. Anyway, I guess all I'm trying to say is, having been through a similar thing, and I'm just curious if you feel this way now in your work at Cue Ball, and particularly your work as a writer, which I also want to talk some more about, that the journey is the destination. You know, my joy in Legends and Losers is that you and I get to do this. My joy in the work that I do, you know, I'm mostly retired, but I do a little bit of work here and there with some startups and some friends and the like. And my joy in that is that I get to work with great people on great shit. And sure, is it awesome the day they ring the opening bell on the NYSE? Fuck yeah, that's incredible. And we all want to have those in our life. But the actual joy for me today is the day in and day out of just loving being in the conversation and being with great people and working on great shit. So how is it for you now as you kind of, you know, you've transcended that horrible loss and you're now having the success that you are?
Well, I don't know if I'm having success yet. I think first it was just perspective of how you define success, because I think, you know, as I wrote most recently in Good People, I think real goodness starts with truth. It then moves to compassion and ultimately redefines success in terms of a sense of wholeness. And we're all on this asymptotic quest towards wholeness. And, you know, the great legendary basketball coach of UCLA, John Wooden, you know, he didn't ever define success, even though he was the winningest coach in NCAA history, as winning and losing. He has said, look, there have been games that we have been outscored that I did not feel like we won. And there are games that we have been underscored that, you know, we felt like we were heroes. And he said, the real definition of success is not through a definition of winning or losing. The real definition comes from a sense of wholeness. That is having the peace and self-satisfaction of knowing that you have done the best to which you are capable towards that authentic calling to which you are trying to pursue. And that is what it has to be about, right? So to the extent we can just stay somewhat authentic towards that quest, whatever it is, But ultimately, it's this continuous quest just to realize a higher expression of yourself. So when you talk about the journey, well, it's just steps in the journey are either helping you or not helping you or keeping you neutral towards realizing a higher expression of your inner self. And real wholeness and real success first begins with the level of humility and self-awareness to that journey. But it becomes then compassionate about helping others realize it, because true joy comes from the intrinsic meaning of having something like Legends and Losers and telling people like, hey, man, like, look, everyone says it. There's a hard truth to soft matters. We all want to believe it's all this winning and losing, and it's all easy for people to say. You're going to say, well, it's all easy for, Lockhead and Chan to say after they've had a modicum of success. But the truth is that, real winning in this world is pursuing wholeness of yourself and others. And, that's not defined by a score. It's not defined by an IPO. It's not defined by a wallet or a checkbook. It's defined by something much deeper. Do you feel that you are living with a sense of integrity, or what I write about, what I call self-congruence, which is that simple act of actually, doing what you say, saying what you think, thinking what you feel, and realizing what you feel is who you are. And when you can actually, do that, do we actually do what we say? Do we actually say what we think? Do we actually think what we feel? Do we actually realize how we feel is just who we are? And that we're all put here just to have, a continuous asymptotic quest to a higher expression of that inner self.
Holy fuck, that was awesome. Now, in the very beginning of that, you said the hard truth about soft matters. Say a little bit more about that.
Yeah, well, if I don't credit my partner, he's going to give me a lot of hell. So I was not a partner, Mats Lederhausen. So I'm very good at appropriating other people's ideas. So Mats Lederhausen.
Aren't we all, quote, right? We all strive to stand on the shoulders of giants.
Yeah, okay. So yeah, you were the one that gave me the idea for the subtitle of my book, Good People. Simon & Schuster, you were the people that decided not to use it. But anyhow, it's...
Isn't that funny how sometimes the publisher tells, and you're like, wait a minute.
They came up with a good one, though. So anyhow, but let's go back to what that means. I think that it's just like, we've lived with this mantra that you have to, manage what you can measure, and you can't manage what you can't measure. But sometimes you have to value what you can't measure. And, what's harder to manage is those things of love, of respect, of wisdom, of leading, whereby you're looking for leaders who are not just seeking followers, but leaders, as Tom Peters put, who are in the business of producing other leaders, who are imprinting positivity onto...
I hate to interrupt you, but I love that. You said, I can't remember if you wrote it or said it, but I know you did. You said, leaders are not in the business of creating followers. They're in the business of creating other leaders. Did I remember that right, Tony?
That's right, yeah.
That's awesome.
And I
got to ask you, can you tell me the story? You tell this awesome story about Sun Yen.
Yeah.
Could you share that with me?
Yeah. So, Sun Yen is like this kind of Asian Yoda guru who...
At McKinsey, is that right? Am I remembering that right?
Yeah, he was, I believe, one of the first partners at McKinsey, one of the youngest. Kind of came out of Alberta for his studies and went to McKinsey Toronto. And, McKinsey is obviously the global strategy consulting firm. I start my career. Again, they needed a quota kid, Newfoundlander, overseas Chinese who graduated from Harvard.
A quota kid. So is that how you felt? You were just like...
They didn't have one of me. They needed me to check the box,
Yeah, well, you check a couple of boxes, I guess, right?
Check a lot of boxes.
Diversity.
I never try to compete on competency. That's much harder.
People just compete on diversity.
Yeah.
A little reverse discrimination never hurt, right?
You gotta leverage what you have, man. So, he became a partner at McKinsey, and one day while traveling, there was a young associate we happened to run across, and I'm not even sure Sun Yen fully remembered who he was. And the associate says, "Sun Yen, Sun Yen." And Sun Yen said, "Yes." And he said, "You know, you remember me, like I was at McKinsey, and you know, you got to come over for dinner with me and my wife. I mean, it's, you got to, there's so many important things that I have to share with you." And Sun Yen, "Oh, okay, maybe." And he said, no, I insist, you must come." So Sun Yen goes, "Okay." And then so that evening, Sun Yen goes, and basically the evening, this young associate is telling him how Sun Yen had changed his life. I'm sure somewhere in the dim recesses of memory there, he said, "How the hell did I change this guy's life?" And he said, "Well, you're the only partner at McKinsey. When I said I was interested in music, you didn't try to say, 'Hey, McKinsey has a practice area in music. We do entertainment. We have an entertainment and media practice. You know, you really should like work with client X in the music industry.' You said, 'You know, I have such a big passion and craze for it. And you're feeling my fire in the belly to just quit and go for it.' And I was just kind of taken aback, but I did that. And man, like, I've just been rocking and rolling and kicking it." And, you know, the night went on and they probably shared a couple glasses of wine and had a profound impact on Sun Yen. And when he was at the airport, he bought the thickest notebook he could find. It was about 300 odd pages. And he decided to write down how he felt, how he had changed a person as that person had described it. And, you know, he decided then and there that he would make the rest of his career, not just at McKinsey, but as a life mission, to be about generativity, about that goal that, you know, we the only way to really pass on goodness is through that commitment and realization of our own immortality and passing on as much goodness as you can to a future generation, meaning that he would never be allowed to write an entry in this diary of mentorship without someone coming on their own accord, without any solicitation, of thanking him for something that he had done. It had to have a profound impact on the trajectory of that person's personal or professional career. And, you know, it had to be sincere and thankful, and he had to feel that thanks. And each time that happened, he would write it down, not just to get like the notches on a belt, but to help him understand how he can continually be a better mentor. And he decided that he would not stop working until that notebook was filled. And he would commit at least a page to each person that on their own self-accord came and thanked him for positively changing their life. So after 30-something years and 300 pages filled, he then left and retired at McKinsey on his own accord, having filled that book of the stories of some hundreds of people that had come forward saying that he, more than anyone, had profoundly changed their life, the values and character of who they are, including, by the way, the current CEO and managing director of McKinsey & Company, who has said that it would not be an overstatement to say, outside of the original founders of McKinsey, that there has perhaps been no other leader at McKinsey that has had such a profound impact on our values, and certainly on Dominic Barton himself as Sun Yen. And I was fortunate to have been a mentee and now a colleague of his. And, you know, we co-authored the last book I did together that was a New York Times bestseller.
Which is just so, so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I think, I don't know, you tell me. Is there anything else before we kick out of this wave? I have one other big question I want to ask you, Tony, but before I do that,
yeah,
is there
anything? The only thing building off of Sun Yen that we talked about, and I put a calling into, you know, my book, Good People, is ultimately why we're here. If you just try to think of yourself, my call to action is, you know, look, it probably takes superpower on steroids to try to aspire to do anything at that level, but if we can each imagine writing our own book and committing 10 chapters to 10 people, not only who we imprint positivity, but if those chapters evolve over our lives like they have with my mentors, where we then have this beautiful symbiotic, reciprocal relationship of learning, affection, love, respect, shared wisdom – if we can commit ourselves to trying to fill 10 chapters in our life, then that is a pursuit of a life of wholeness that I talked about. And in doing so, you know, just imagine a world where if we can really positively change 10 people and they just elect to do the same for 10 other people and they do the same for 10 other people, and we are really about leaders producing other leaders with that mindset that goodness is something beyond competency. It's about instilling and cultivating character and values and this ongoing chemistry, beauty, evolution of mentorship, development, reciprocal learning. 10 people helping 10 others who help 10 others. Sounds audacious, but you can change the world. And, you know, like to me is, you know, every waterfall begins with a drop, as they say. So who are your 10?
I love that. I'm going to start taking better notes, I think.
you got this recorded. You're good.
Yeah. And actually, the fun thing about that, the recording of Legends and Losers, is I realize it's a capsule, right? It's a way to capture a set of conversations that hopefully make a very big difference.
Yeah.
But it's definitely
respect
a capsule.
For what you're doing.
Yeah. And the other big question I have for you, Tony, is, you know, you work with lots of entrepreneurs, of course, and of course, you're an entrepreneur. What is sort of the biggest takeaways you have and maybe the biggest advice you'd give to entrepreneurs given your experience?
Well, that's a big question. I think first realize that entrepreneurship is a tightrope walk between vulnerability and conviction. We like to use euphemisms for being risk takers, but, you know, all entrepreneurs are embracing some level of vulnerability. And it's positive vulnerability. We've elected and chosen to expose the world that vulnerability. If it's opening up a nail salon, if it's trying to change a piece of technology, trying to do new biotech, anything you do, starting a new podcast, everything has a level of vulnerability. And it's okay to live in this kind of dichotomous world in your head of having that vulnerability that is very real, that's felt, while needing to express a level of conviction, inspiration, confidence, and understanding at times those things don't reconcile. I think that's the truth of entrepreneurship. We're on a tightrope between yeah. vulnerability and conviction. And anyone telling you something different is a little bit full of BS, I think. I think that leadership is lonely. The vulnerability is very, very, very real day in, day out. And, you know, and I'd also say that entrepreneurship goes well beyond just, a business side. Vulnerability is... vulnerability and entrepreneurship happens in everyday life, right? As Howard Stevenson and Bill Solomon, two legendary professors of Harvard Business School, said, entrepreneurship is the relentless pursuit of opportunity without regard to resource. And you could be a mother, a single parent, you could be an immigrant, all those things hold truth. We are all in the game or context of entrepreneurship of life. So, we're all bonded by that. That's number one. Number two is, you know, if you really want to make a difference, you know, real magic happens when we dare to strip ourselves away from those titles of entrepreneur, CEO, employee, host, and guest, and strip all the titles and BS away and just connect on a human to human level. And real goodness is about remembering that human factor. And great entrepreneurship and great magic happens when we are not afraid to go at that thing that is very human. That's when you get the real why of a business. That's when you really get the soul. That's when you get the heart. And, you know, to never forget that if you're really trying to create, you know, something great. And then, you know, lastly, ultimately, you're here, and this goes back to wholeness. We're here, like you've said, to create leaders and meaningful roles for people, whether that's your client, your stakeholders. I think we have a duty to serve. It's a privilege to be a leader. It's a privilege to be an entrepreneur. And, you know, for all the crap and all the hard work and all the loneliness and ups and downs and roller coaster, it's a privilege. And you got to remember that. And you have a duty to serve. And, you know, great, great long-term profit is just a byproduct of having that right mindset, philosophy. And the purpose and the people will always be bigger than the idea. The founding father of venture capital, George Doriot, has said, you know, given the choice between an A plus idea and a B team, or an A team and even a C or D idea, choose the latter. Great people. And when I say great people, I mean people of not just great competency, but great character and values. You know, that's what you want, because life's short. We're 70% of our time at work. Let's be around good people that we care about, and let's help produce more of them.
It, first of all, that was unbelievable. Second of all, yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, one of my favorite expressions is legendary people build legendary businesses. And I was having a conversation earlier today with an entrepreneur who's doing incredibly well, and there's 15 or 20 people in the company. And, you know, they're off to a great start. And he says to me, he says, "Hey, yesterday I fired one of our folks. And I'm just curious, what do you think I should do? You know, should I have an all hands meeting, or what should I do?" And I said, "Well, why did you fire this person?" And he said, "Well, they weren't performing." And he said they were a bad cultural fit and whiner and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, "Okay, do you think at your company you've got A players?" He says, "Yeah." I said, "Was this person a B player?" He says, "Yeah." I said, did everybody in the company know that?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "You don't need to have an all hands meeting. Everybody knows, and everybody knows you did the right thing." Right. And so I guess my point is, particularly in earlier stage or startup companies, one B player can ruin the whole company.
Yeah. And it's not just a B from a competency. It's a B from a culture.
All around. I couldn't agree more.
I mean, it's that old adage, right? A's attract A's, B's attract C's. And it's as simple as that, right? So, you need to hold yourself to, I'll go back to the guru Sun Yen that we talked about. If he was like, "Tony, you know, you focus. Common value, common standards. That's it. Common values and common standards." You know, it's just so beautifully succinct that I end up thinking about, what is common values? You know, when you have an issue, are these people going to have a common set of principles where we can use those principles as a riverbank to lead us to the right direction of an answer? And common standards from a competency standpoint, you know, if you were building furniture and every detail mattered to you and the stitching on the backstrap that no one saw, but your company valued that because it was just a standard of excellence. You know, your company valued the inside stitching and lining of a beautiful blazer jacket, or a battery being pre-charged, or the packaging and experience of opening a new product. And, you know, you need to have first a grounding on a common set of values, because that connects you to the inner why of any business and inner purpose and the heart and the soul. You know, I often talk about that documentary, Jiro Dreams of Sushi. And, you know, do you feel that, you know, common value like that, that there's purpose and meaning and a calling? The Greeks had a word for a type of love called agape. And there's different types of love. You have eros, which is very erotic, and you have, you know, philia, which is brotherly love, like Philadelphia. But agape is sacrificial love. And sacrificial love is like that motherly, maternal love, that thing to which it is worth giving sacrifice to, that automated.
The I put you ahead of me.
I put you ahead of me. My maternal instinct is that, you know, this baby will come and, you know, find nourishment off of me immediately. I don't. The Dalai Lama said we are born with that instinctual compassion. It is the thing that is to which sacrifice is worth giving to. That is like, you know, a grounding of common values and in common standards. You know, are you going to just do it at a level that makes us all proud, like that we have a standard of excellence, but we embrace the diversity of excellence to which we achieve that standard and, you know, and celebrate the common values behind it.
You are unbelievable. And, you know, the other thing that makes me think about common values and standards, I've been in business with people who I think are generally good people, and we don't, and we share some common values and standards, but we don't share others.
Yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily make them bad or wrong people. However, when, you know, over years, of course, I've gotten clear about my own values and standards and the ones that really matter the most to me and the ones that I can, you know, have a little more flexibility on, so to speak. And so the interesting thing to me is, just because you don't share all the same common values and standards doesn't mean you have to think that person's an asshole.
No.
But they may not be a good person for you to be, you know, to have as a colleague or to work with or to hire or whatever the case may be, right? It just means we have different. I had this conversation with another entrepreneur about one of my favorite management approaches on in this exact regard to get to the concept of common standards, although I wouldn't have called it that. I will now. Thank you, Tony. Is I learned early on that I was a pretty shitty manager. And so I had to find a way to sort of, if you will, raise standards, right? And so a technique I learned was when somebody would come to me with something and they were going to show it to me, I would always ask them the same question, which is, before you show me whatever this thing is, do you think this is legendary? And if they did, then I really wanted to see it. And if they didn't, then I'd ask them the same thing, which is, well, do you need more time or do you need my help or help from somebody else? But here's what I do know. I want you to tell me on this, whatever the this is, what you think is legendary. And that way, you know, I could tell, did we have the same standards or not?
Yeah.
Right? And it also, of course, encourage people to think about things in those terms. What I love about McKinsey are many, many things. And Marvin Bauer is absolutely one of my business heroes. He's the category designer of management consulting. Mm. And I think he's one of those guys in business that, you know, most people don't know. And he doesn't get anywhere near the credit he deserves. And so does that McKinsey background you know, Sun Yan and all of the other leaders. Did you know, you must have known Fred Gluck?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was on our board at Scion. I didn't know him that well, but we did spend time together. Mm-hmm. But he exuded that awesome McKinsey-ness, you know? Mm-hmm. Was that the place that you think shaped your career the most?
I think it's one of the places, but I wouldn't call any single place the place. I think if there was any the, I said I put it in the context of clan and community first, of the family, close friends, the community of Newfoundland, before I put it as the culture of any corporation. It was certainly a place that formulated some early thinking, but I think equally the starting of my own businesses, the great mentors I've had, like Sun Yen, but people like Jay Chiat that founded TBWA, Chiat Day.
Boy, he is amazing, isn't he?
Yeah, I've just been blessed. I mean,
holy shit! How long did you get to work with him?
Quite a while, until he died 70 years young.
What year did he die? Remind me.
Well, I have it there. So in my office in 2002. I'll tell you, like, there's just a great, I'll walk over right now for 1 second.
I mean, Jay, when I think about Jay, I'd be curious what you think, but when I think about Jay, you know, he's an absolute pioneer. Yeah. And I would put him, I don't know, would you put him right up there with the David Ogilvy, or where do you hold Jay?
So I was just looking, 'cause in my office, I have a few images up of people that have shaped my life and, you know, family. And Jay is up there, and it says April 25th, 2002. And I remember being there. And
that's how long it's been since he passed away?
Yeah, 70 years young. So he, you know, he used to joke, you know, after forming one of the most iconic advertising firms and helping to put Frank Gehry on the map, the legendary architect.
You could argue Jay is the reason we know who Frank is, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we would know Frank's buildings because they're amazing, but we wouldn't necessarily, we don't know the architect of a lot of amazing
buildings. Yeah, I think Frank would say that Jay was instrumental, and certainly he was instrumental shaping my life. You know, the thing about Jay was he would look at the goodness and possibility in any idea before the negative. And I have a rule, the 24/3 rule, inspired by him, is that when someone gives you a new idea, can you wait 24 seconds before criticizing it? And if you could do that, can you wait 24 minutes? And if you're really Zen-like, like a Sun Yen or a Jay or Henry McCants, my mentor, who was legendary and is legendary, possibly the most legendary venture capitalist in history, chairman emeritus of Greylock for 45 years, can you wait 24 hours, an entire day, think about every reason why the idea might work before allowing your mind to think about one reason why it won't? And that sense of optimism that you give, you know, what Adam Grant calls being an energy giver, can you actually convey and be that person that doesn't suck oxygen out of room, but always inspire people to push for new things? Jay was that. And that picture I just went to walk up and look at, April 25th, 2002. I remember just talking to them just before he passed, and Edwina Von Gaal, his wife, and she said, like, you know, Jay's pretty weak, but it's a beautiful thing. We're looking at the sunset here at Venice Beach, and then he passed, you know, with cancer. And, you know, the next day we looked all around, and what I went up to look at, full page ad in New York Times, Steve Jobs, think different, picture of Jay Chiat. Steve Jobs printed a whole page ad, Jay sitting in the chair, think different.
It really does says it all about that guy, doesn't it?
Yeah. So, you know, I just think it's about these great mentors, these great people that, you know, as we said, that surround you. And as you said, when you talk to people, is this legendary? Well, you know, push yourself to legendary standards, but push yourself to, you know, people you truly feel in your heart of hearts are legendary, not because of their status or title, but because you feel when you are in their presence, you feel a fuller version of yourself. You feel that they're not just doing goodness when there's a moral test put before them, but you feel that they're trying to do goodness onto you whenever they have the chance to. And you know that you are making progress towards your quest of wholeness when you're just in the presence of someone that just helps you feel that you're a fuller version of yourself. And you equally know when you're in the presence of someone trying to do your mentorship, what I call phatic behavior, P-H-A-T-I-C.
And I don't know phatic. That word. Phatic?
Phatic. Margot Fiden is a character. She's this bohemian artistic gallery owner of Al Hirschfeld in New York. And she said, Tony, do you know what the word phatic means? When I went to see her, you're a smart guy. Even my literary friends don't know the word phatic. Well, phatic means procedural. It's when we default to pleasantries. It's when we say, how are you? When I said, so she asked me that when I said, Margo, how are you? She goes, do you really want to know how I am? You know, that's such a effing phatic question. You know, I said, what does phatic mean? And she goes, well, phatic is like where you just say, how are you? I'm fine. You don't really want to know how I am. You came here to interview me for your book. We're going to talk. I'm going to give you some wisdom. You're going to go away feeling good. And it's good. If you really want to know how I'm freaking doing, book a day and I'll tell you all the shit going on. But you don't really want to know how I'm doing. We're about Southern pleasanters. You know, how y'all doing? I'm doing fine. Y'all, like, yeah, it's all good. It's all good. That's phatic. I mean, and we live so much in this phatic procedural standard operating procedure, you know, if A, then B world. And we got to get back to some of that humanity, man. I mean, like, we got to get back to authenticity, lose some of that phatic nature. And how do you know you're making progress? How do you know you're winning? Well, if you're trying to hire someone, do you feel a sense of affection, respect, and pride? If you're trying to surround yourself with good people, do you just feel a fuller version of yourself, or do you feel like phatic bullshit around you? Like, do you feel like you're just doing the professional thing? Like, hey, you know, like, you know, we're having a good time having this conversation. That's what you said. I said, what's going to make this legend loser session good? He said, have an authentic conversation. Well, I feel it's an authentic conversation, you know, like, and we all go through our corporate stock talks. We all go through our, you know, riff our lines, and you know, and we probably all say the same thing several times, but you feel it when it's different. It's the difference between going into two music halls, two people playing the exact same piece of music. One could be technically perfect. I could say these exact same words on another podcast or something. People might not feel it. Why don't they feel it? Because you know what? There's something not there. There's something not raw. There's not something not vulnerable. There's something not authentic. There's something that doesn't feel like dialogue. There's something that feels scripted and stock talky and, you know, spitting off things that are rehearsed. We have to move beyond rehearsing to revealing.
Oh, fuck. You just encapsulated, Tony, why I so much wanted to do Legends and Losers, particularly in business conversations. You know, we're, look,
I wouldn't even charge you for it.
You know, you're a media savvy guy. You've written two bestsellers. You're McKinsey. You could walk into any boardroom in the world and be fucking awesome. And we know how to do that stuff. We know how to play the part and show up, right? Every successful person knows how to do that. But to your point earlier on vulnerability, I love what you said around vulnerability. Yeah. Because you're right. I think you're absolutely right, Tony, because people in business talk about it as risk. And sure, we're risking money and we're risking other things. But the truth is, it's by taking a chance in something that we believe in. And, you know, the phrase we hear today is, quote unquote, putting yourself out there, which, you know, is a fine phrase, I guess. If you're going to do that for real, by definition, you're going to be vulnerable.
You're going to be vulnerable. And I think that's okay. I mean, Breen Brown and others have talked about the power of vulnerability. Embrace your vulnerability as long as you know you're doing active vulnerability, positive vulnerability. You know, what we don't want to convey is that passive vulnerability. You're just going to stick yourself in a corner and crumple up and let shit come at you. We're talking about positive, proactive vulnerability, entrepreneurship, about managing the risk and understanding, having self-awareness that this is not going to be easy. Saying it's not about the, you know, succeeding and failing by the extrinsic. It's about, you know, just constantly trying to put out there that highest expression of who you are, what you could become, what you can contribute to a calling that can nudge the world a little bit further. And if, you know, if this podcast helps, you know, a handful of people as opposed to millions, that's okay too, you know. And Anna Quinlan wrote that great poem. Don't know what it's called, but I remember Tim Shriver, the chairman of Special Olympics, sharing it at Davos, Switzerland, where, you know, there's a kid walking along the seashore with the mother, and there's all these, you know, crabs crawling up and down the beach. And then the kid starts, like, you know, grabbing those crabs. They're struggling and throwing them back into the ocean. And you just see hundreds and hundreds of crabs just still coming up. And the mom says, what good could that possibly do? What meaning does, you know, are you pursuing? And the kid just goes, Mom, well, I'm pretty sure it had a meaning to that crab. And
I love that story.
You know, and I think it's, you know, I think we sometimes lose our humanity because we get too grandiose of this vision that we all have a delusion of grandeur. We're going to change the world at such scale and all that. And look, love it. Let's all do it. But, you know, the real script is in those, if we're so lucky to have 10 chapters of rich, deep relationships where there's that authentic, you know, virtuous circle of rich learning, living, and loving.
Tony, you're amazing. The whole time you're talking, I just think, where the fuck did this guy come from? It reminds me a little bit of the conversation we had a while back with Eric Yuan, who's the He's originally from China, interestingly enough. And he came here during the dot-com boom and was one of the first 20-some-odd engineers at WebEx.
Yeah.
And he's now the founder of Zoom. And he's like you in that every time he said something, I just go, holy shit, where did this guy come from?
Generous.
His whole focus is on happiness, by the way. He thinks if you create happiness for your people and happiness for your customers, good things happen. And so go create happiness in the world. That's his whole mantra. It's incredible. Yeah. Anyway, I only share that with you because as we've just been talking, it's like, as you go off, I'm like, you're a venture capitalist, right?
Well, I'm an accidental venture capitalist. I think I'm first and foremost trying to be a human capitalist and, you know, believing that if there's, you know, a sense of purpose and you're just really backing people of great competency and great character who can create a platform around them, you have a chance of doing something special. And I think the greatest venture capitalists do that. I think, you know, people like Henry McCants, they've always been in a world, you know, there's a reason why Greylock is one of the greatest venture capital firms, because I think he and other founders of that firm instilled the feeling that, you know, you're in pursuit of being very comfortable of trying to be the world's best supporting actor. And I think that's a good way of putting it. I think that we've dumbed down these phrases. This is the problem with, like I said, title. You know, positional authority is never as special as earned respect. And I think that, you know,
I hate to interrupt you, but don't you think a lot of us in business confuse that? Of course, you know, there's positional power with being a CEO or a chief, whatever, ding dong, or whatever level, you know, you have signing authority and expense authority and hiring and firing. So there's real, if you want to call that power, there's real power that comes with that. But that's not the power that matters.
No.
The power that matters is who you are powerful enough that you can make a difference in the room that you're in.
Yeah. And a difference for yourself. I mean, recognizing that, you know, being true to yourself. I mean, I think that's very, very powerful. I mean, to just be not afraid to express yourself. And I'm glad, generally speaking, the world is moving towards that. Some big mega trends around gender neutrality, greater acceptance, I think, for all the kind of, you know, short-term kind of issues we're seeing and facing. You know, I had a great leader who's a great investor, a guy, Li Lu, who was the co-leader of Tiananmen Square, speak at one of my recent gatherings with a former Assistant Secretary of Defense and founding dean at Kennedy School, Graham Allison, and said, you know, how do the Chinese view the current leadership and everything? And we're not supposed to talk on any politics, but he said, like, the Chinese have a very practical philosophy. They just are long-term thinkers, and they don't really think about it because nothing's permanent. This thing is a couple-year thing in our few hundred-year history. So you just have to have a long, long-term view. You just got to, like, we just got to be more patient. We got to be, you know, more patient.
It's funny, we forget that, I think, a lot in life and certainly in business. In a lot of ways, time is our friend, right?
Time is our friend.
If you take the long-term view, one of the other mantras I love that sort of comes from martial arts is we do what's right because it's right.
Yeah. That's, you know, that's such a great summary, that's probably one of the great summaries of our conversations. Like, in writing good people, at the end, it's not that complicated. You just try to do what's right, man. Like, I mean, if we just kind of, like, simplify things, like, we can all learn different ways to be eloquent and express it, but in the end, it's like, do you feel like you're just doing the right thing because it's the right thing to do?
I'll tell you just a very quick story about this. One of my best friends, a guy I consider an adopted brother, his name's Matt Hansen, and he's my ski, you know, coach. I grew up skiing and then I didn't ski for a long time. And when I moved to California, I sort of knew Tahoe was there, but I didn't really get it. And when I went there, I went, holy shit.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to buy a place there. And ultimately I did. And I lived there full time for about 5 years. And anyway, long story longer, the first time I went on a mountain bike ride with my friend Matt, we were on the trail and he was ahead of me. He's much lighter than I am and a much better mountain biker than I am. But he was slowing down for me, which was nice. Anyway, there was some piece of shit on the side of the trail. I can't remember what it was, a piece of garbage of one sort or another. And he stopped. And at first I thought he was stopping to wait for me. And then I saw him get off his bike and pick up whatever this thing was and put it in his pocket or his backpack and get back on his bike. And he didn't say anything. We just kept going. I said, "Hey, Matt, what did you just do there?" And he said, "I it's not okay with me that people throw garbage in nature." And so, and that guy stops no matter what he's doing and picks up garbage.
Yeah.
And he is an insanely successful real estate guy. And, but it's not okay with him that there's garbage on the trail. We do what's right because it's right.
That's a great example, right? Of someone living consistent with his values, because ultimately we talked about it, like, you know, you can agree to disagree on different sets of values. Well, what I would say is that the most inner circle of a concentric set of circles, we have some universal human values that are around truth, compassion, and a sense of wholeness that are universal. And those are kind of irrefutable. And we need people that can work with, like, you know, humility, integrity, and self-awareness, and empathy, and kindness, and generosity, and love, respect, and wisdom. Those are universal values. But then going out there, you know, values of sustainability or values that have to do with, like, more personalized sense and sensibilities of how one views the world, you can agree to disagree on those. But what you can't disagree on is one's integrity to one's values. So your friend,
right? You might disagree with the value, maybe, but
are they acting consistently?
Yes.
With it, and on an individual level, that's very important to create respect. On an organizational cultural level, that is what defines culture. Culture is the expression of actions and stories that happen around things that are, you know, meant to be representations of one's values. So that is a great example of integrity.
So let me ask you this. We live in a world today where, I don't know about you, but I hear words a lot that I didn't used to hear. I hear gratitude and grateful and honor and a lot of big words like that I didn't used to hear. Oh, it's an honor to meet you. I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful every day. Some people sign off their emails, you know, gratefully yours and all this stuff. And, you know, on one hand, it's good that I think people are acknowledging some of this stuff. But on the other hand, some of it starts to sound like bullshit. Some of it starts to feel like manipulation. And so I go to, okay, it's great to say that shit. What do you fucking do? Because, and here's what I'm finding, and I don't want to put a damper on this conversation because it's an amazing conversation, but I'm finding that there are people who are not necessarily grounded in their values, who don't pick up the garbage just because they feel like it's the right thing to do. And they use these words like honor and grateful and all these other, you know, highfalutin words, and they will rip you off like a fucking son of a bitch at a heartbeat.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what, where's your head at around kind of, this is a great conversation to have. And how do you hold yourself and others up to, you know, as my friend, Matty A says, does their video match their audio?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, you know, I like that saying, does the video match the audio? I mean, I think that's just it, right? Like, I actually view it as a positive if we can help people understand that ultimately it's okay that some people aren't like that, but there are plenty of people. I think there's plenty of people where the video does match the audio. I think there's plenty of people that want to do good consistently. And not getting caught up, I think we get caught up with that phatic bullshit, right? Like the phaticness, the proceduralness. And just going back to the basics, does this person make you feel a better version of yourself? And does this person make you want to feel to be better? And if not, then ask yourself why. And like, you know, we have limited time, and I think we end up spending too much of our time falling prey. I'll use that, falling prey to what others are telling us are the things that extrinsically matter, when you have a great inner sonar radar for people, right? And everyone has their inner sonar for people. And if that person is helping you feel a higher expression of yourself, you're feeling that respect, you're feeling, a sense of pride being with that person, you know, just always ask yourself those three things. Like, hey, I have a baseline of collegial affection. I really respect that, because Matty A, like, that's cool shit, man. He stopped and picked that up. And do you have a sense of pride? What's pride? Well, I don't know. Use the Thanksgiving test. If you had to bring this person home for Thanksgiving in front of your parents, like, are you going to feel proud or not? Like, you know, what's that feeling? If you hit those three things, I tell you, you know why I feel great about that? Because it's okay to say, you know, most people aren't going to pass that filter, but a lot will. And the sooner you just not worry about it, and that, you know, you can find a lot of people that are simpatico with you. Like, you know, I'd say, hey, look, if I don't speak to a lot of these other people, it's okay. I hope that we have another conversation. I've enjoyed this, you know, and then that's a choice, right? So understand that choice is yours. That choice, you can't control a lot of things in life. You can choose how you spend your time. And too often we compromise on who we elect to put around us, but ultimately our own goodness is most influenced by the people around us. So make that choice.
Yeah, there's a podcaster you may know named JLD, John Lee Dumas.
Yeah,
Entrepreneur on Fire. He was kind enough to have me on. He's coming on Legends and Losers soon. He's really, really fun. Anyway, one of the things he says, pardon me?
I'm not good enough for him.
You're not good enough for him? Well, I'll put in a good word for you.
that was the bait. Thanks for taking it.
Well, hey, I've got him scheduled to be on Legends and Losers, I think, in the next week or so. So
cool.
I could tell him how awesome you are. Anyway, one of the things I think, if he doesn't say it every show, he says it a lot, which is we're the sum of the five people we spend the most time with. And, you know, I don't know if that's actually accurately true, but it's directionally right, of course. And it is interesting how we do become who we hang out with. And one of the little tells that I look for, I'd be curious to ask you this, is particularly when you're meeting somebody new and you're trying to understand, you know, is this somebody that I really want to spend some time with? Especially if you're having that sort of, affectionate bromance or whatever. I don't know what a bromance is called with a gal who's you're not romantically involved with, but you're falling in love with, whatever that's called. Anyway, I look for little tells, and I'll give you around values. I'll give you a simple example. I think it's important to tip people really well.
100%.
And I could tell you why I think that, but I think it's really important. And so I fucking do. And when you see somebody leave a real shitty tip, or just do, you know, those little acts of shittiness that some people do? And so today when I meet somebody and I'm kind of falling in love with them and developing that affection you talk about, and then I notice them do that little shitty thing, in the past I would just sort of blow it off. But I've learned over the years that, at least for me personally, when people do little shitty things that are out of alignment with what I consider core values, that's a big, big tell for me.
Yeah.
And then you discover later on that, like, the guy that, you know, screwed the waitress out of a tip is now the guy that's a complete douchebag on a business deal. You're like, okay, well, I should have known better, you know?
Yeah.
And so as I've gotten more experience in my life, Tony, I've gotten to that place where I pay attention to those little moments. You know, for example, how do people treat, in our world, how do people treat the guys and gals who clean your hotel room?
Yeah.
Or check you in at the airport or all of that stuff, right?
Yeah,
anybody like that, anybody who treats people like that like shit, I don't want to do a deal with them, because it's out of alignment with my values. Yeah. And I've seen people do shitty things in those kinds of moments, and then later on the big shitty things come out. And so I guess my point is I pay attention to those little tells in a way that I never used to. And I'm curious what you think about that.
Well, it's a great way to wrap up, because sadly I need to run. But you know, in the 12th chapter of my book, Good People, I talk a lot about how to become a better judge of people. And, you know, that was almost a setup too good.
Well, that's why I wanted to ask.
I say one of the most important things to do is to have a sense around how they treat, how people you want to spend time with treat a wide and diverse array of people from all different stations and waypoints in life. And, you know, when I talk about how you become a better interviewer, like one of the best things that you could do is exactly that, is first, level one is imagine when they leave your place, how they would treat, how they would treat the server, the Lyft or Uber driver, how they would treat the custodian, how they would treat the security person. And one of the things we did at one of my prior firms was, you know, the receptionist test. And if someone ever came in and was at all rude to the receptionist, we'd come out and just say, hey, look, you might be having a bad day, want to be empathetic. Just kind of learn that, yeah, maybe not your finest moment, tell us about it. But there wasn't a good response. You just say, look, you know, we just don't think it's necessary to interview today. When I told that story doing a TED workshop this year, someone put up their hand and said, hey, you know what? We go one further. For anyone important we're hiring, we tell security downstairs to delay them 10 minutes purposely.
That's fucking great.
And, you know, we want to see how they deal with it. And then we may delay them an extra 5 minutes. And if that person is freaking out, screaming and calling the person an asshole and they're on the list, they got an interview, or if they're like calm and saying, look, you know, I think that's a little extreme. But it gets to the point, man. But hey, man, this is great. Congrats on just an awesome, awesome program. Glad you're doing it. Such a great theme. Doing your part of a good service. You know, like I said,
trying to.
Well, and it's in a fun form. I mean, I've done a ton of these, and
have you ever thought about your own podcast, Tony?
Yeah, but I still have a day job, so I got to...
But you're so fucking great. I mean...
Yeah, whatever.
No, I'm not. Don't whatever me, buddy. Yeah. I mean, you are fucking... Yeah. You are an amazing guy. You have incredible insights. You've written a couple of unbelievable books. You're very, very different in your field, right? This is not the conversation I think most people expect from a venture capitalist. And you'd be a great fucking podcaster, a legendary one.
No, oh, well, I appreciate that coming from you. I think I'll be really thrilled when I get to people like you and you know, spread the message out. And, you know, certainly I've done my part on trying to express myself on books. I got to make some stuff happen in the mini Luxes and the cue balls of the world. I got to work hard at it. And, I really, really appreciate that comment. I think, the world just needs to, you know, nudge to a little bit of a better place. And I think stuff like this helps. So just really, really appreciate it. Hope you look me up when you're in Beantown.
I will. I'm going to see you next time. I'm there for sure.
And as we say, we'll go, kiss the cod and have a screech.
I would love to do that with you. Tony, you are fucking legendary. You have been incredibly open and generous and fucking, I'm haha grateful for our time together.
Yeah, gratefully yours. But no, this was great.
Yeah, an awesome time. Thank you so much. I'm so glad Kevin Maney connected us.
Yeah, that was cool, man.
Of course, he's the connector of legendary people. It's always fun to meet another Canadian in the excited states.
Gathering, our annual gathering next year in June. Shoot me an email, but look me up when you're this way. I'll look you up. And
Well, yeah, and remember, Santa Cruz is a very short drive from Silicon Valley, and You always have a place to stay here, and we're always fully stocked on all the things that you might
want to
be fully stocked on.
All right,
happy to take you out for a surf too.
Hey, cool. That's cool. I just bought a whole bunch of new super dry clothes. So cool stuff, man.
Excellent. Well, Tony, thank you so much. You are awesome. And I look forward to speaking with you again soon, buddy.
All right. Take care.
Continue to be legendary. Whew. There he is, Tony Chan. It's a great book. He's a great guy. Fellow Canadian, and so stoked he could join us on Legends and Losers. If there's somebody in your life who you think would love spending time with Tony, why not share this episode of Legends and Losers with them right now? And also want to tell you about One Life Fully Lived. We have our annual event in Sacramento taking place, Sacramento 21 and 22, 2017. Come visit us. We'd love to see you. One Life Fully Lived is a nonprofit organization that helps people dream, plan, and live their best life. You'll meet a lot of entrepreneurs there, a lot of innovators there, a lot of people who are going for it in life. So come out and visit with us. Also, I'm on tour with our friends at NetSuite. Come out and visit us September 26th, Toronto, September 27th, New York, and November 9th in beautiful Miami. NetSuite Next Ready Business Tour. I'll be signing copies of Play Bigger. We'll be talking about category design. We'll have other industry and business leaders, and we may even have some famous sporting figures show up. So to get your VIP invitation to 26th in Toronto, 27th in New York, or November 9th, in Miami, send email to blackhole@legendsandlosers.com. We'd also love it if you went to legendsandlosers.com and subscribe. And that way we can keep you up to date with all the great shit we got going on and all of this silly crap that we have going on. All right. We would like to thank Equity Directory, connecting startups to the legendary talents and resources they need to produce an outstanding category king business. HarperCollins instant classic, Play Bigger, how pirates, dreamers, and innovators create and dominate markets. Pick up a copy. It'll make your brain bigger. NetSuite, number one in cloud ERP. Come out and see us on the road. blackhole@legendsandlosers.com. Spiro, the sales app for salespeople and sales managers who like to make money. Our good friends at Interview Valet, podcast interview marketing. If you're a thought leader, get your leading thoughts on some podcasts at interviewvalet.com. The Unbreakable Mind podcast with our friend and guest, Navy SEAL Commander Mark Devine. Tahoe Truckee Homes. We make your Tahoe home house dream come true. If you want to live in Tahoe, you want to have a vacation home in Tahoe, call Matt Hansen at Tahoe Truckee Homes, tahotruckeehomes.com. And Rapid Media, legendary marketing outcomes in Australia at rapidmedia.com.au. And the World Wildlife Fund at wwf.org, because our planet and wildlife matter. We must remind you that this oddcast is the sole property of the Legends and Losers Oddcast Network, and we would love it if you shared the shit out of it. All rights do remain disturbed. In the event of a water landing, Legends and Losers can be an awesome flotation device. We also must tell you that Legends and Losers is produced in a studio that clearly contains nuts. However, we are never tested on GMOs. Listen to David Bowie, Johnny Cash was right, support your local marketing guru. In the event of a four-hour erection, call someone who likes you. Thank you so much, Candy Dandy. We love you. And hey, Colin, this oddcast really ties the room together, doesn't it? Our deepest apologies today go out to Greg Clark, Chief Executive Officer of Symantec. Sorry, Greg, we just ran out of time for you. That's it, my friends. Be legendary. And we hope to see you again soon on another episode of Legends and Losers.